Live from New York, it's the Gary Null Show. And now, your host, Gary Null.
Hi, everyone. I'm Gary Null, broadcasting and video streaming live from our studios, New York City. Today, small amount on nutrition, a lot upon what I believe is the coming collapse of many of our economic systems. I hope I am incorrect. I'm going to lay out the pieces of the puzzle as I see them, and then you'll have an opportunity to see, does this make sense? Is it reasonable or not? And I will not have time for anything else, no guest today, because I have a lot of pieces to share with you. But we always begin on the subject of health and healing. The first big study of its kind recently from the University of Basel in Switzerland shows that physical exercise can enhance long-term memory. This is an important study. Quote, our research indicates that exercise-induced increase in neurogenesis improves pattern separation by supporting unique and detailed long-term representations of similar but nevertheless different memory items. So in lay language, what they're saying is, if you're doing physical exercise on a daily basis, you're helping protect your brain and your memory, and we all can benefit from that. I'm a big lover of nuts and seeds, preferably raw, sprouted, and in combinations. And I'm always working in the kitchen. I experiment. One of my hobbies is gourmet vegan recipes. In fact, I have one posted up on my website. They're public service free for you. And it shows a picture of it. These were all taken in my kitchen. I like plating. I like decorating them. And because I think that we could do a lot more creatively with the items that we eat. And it's also fun to experiment. It's like watching someone with one of those wheels where they're making a pottery, and they start off with the clay and the water and the formation. You think, well, what's this going to look like? And then when they're finished, they have something exciting. Same way with food. And one of the foods that people rarely take into account are nuts, because we historically think, nuts are rich sources of fats, and I don't want those extra calories. And we should want those extra calories. Those calories are important for us, and especially the walnut. So in addition to being rich in omega-3 fatty acids and copper, manganese, and other essential nutrients, walnuts protect your heart, help prevent metabolic syndrome and diabetes. And a major study on this showed that just a handful of walnuts every day reduces blood pressure. And that's important, because you can have to consider that stroke is the fourth leading cause of death in the United States, and is frequently a silent killer. Not everybody goes and has, on a regular basis, their blood pressure checked to see, is it normal, below, or above? And hence, we don't know that we have high blood pressure, and we exert ourselves through exercise or an argument, and then boom, up comes a stroke. There's also a form of vitamin E in walnuts that's somewhat unusual and particularly beneficial. Instead of having most of its vitamin E present in the alpha tocopherol form, walnuts provide an unusually high amount of vitamin D in gamma tocopherol. Gamma is G-A-M-M-A. And most of the studies on cardiovascular health for men show that the gamma tocopherol form of vitamin E really protects you from heart problems. So in a study that was published in the British Medical Journal Open Diabetes Research and Care, after taking into account exercise levels, a person's age, calorie and fatty intakes, and other qualities of life, they found that just eating walnuts by itself improved blood vessel function, overall quality of health, lowered blood pressure. Quote from the study, while there's primarily comprised of good fat versus the various saturated fat sources. It's recommended that 20 to 35% of our total calories per day come from fats, and this is one good source of it. Also, another study shows that walnuts are good in their anti-inflammatory capacity, and this is also good for cancer. So this was a separate study, and it was very important. And then also we found that oxytocin is your love hormone. When you cuddle, when you have sex, when you kiss, when you hold hands, when you go for a walk with a loved one, when you pet your dog or cat or bird, whatever pet that you have, when you're playing as kids, all of these create oxytocin. Also, did you know that running with people long-term, just that workout together, you're also creating oxytocin because you're doing it with people you like. From the University of Bonn, that's in Germany, they're saying the following, that the degree to which people are willing to donate their own money for whatever they like will depend upon their level of oxytocin. That's interesting. So now we know oxytocin is not only good for our heart and our brain and our nerves, but it also increases social altruism. That is terrific. And so when people have that cuddle hormone, it strengthens social ties. And we know it does so with love, and even women breastfeeding, it's how they bond with their babies and create that eternal love. But it also, when we're having that, it allows us to see other people and their suffering from a more understanding, empathetic position, more willing when we're feeling that love to extend that to everything else in our environment. So that's something unique, and I just wanted to share that with you. Also, from the University of Melbourne, that's in Australia, it says, to keep young smiles healthy, dentists recommend limiting both sugar-free and sugary drinks. And they found that even sugar-free drinks, and I could explain why, it's the low pH, meaning it's highly acidic. You have acidic additives, even if you have no sugar, and those additives will damage the enamel on your teeth, and that leads to cavities. Quote, many people are not aware that while reducing your sugar intake does reduce your risk of dental decay, the chemical mix of acids in some foods and drinks can cause the equally damaging conditions of dental erosion. Dental erosion, by the way, occurs when acids dissolve the hard tissues of the tooth, and in its early stages, erosion strips away the surface layers of tooth enamel. And if it progresses, it advances and exposes the soft pulp inside the tooth. So, here's something else. For those of you who use some of the natural hygiene techniques of starting the morning with apple cider vinegar or lemon juice and water, good. I highly recommend it. But don't swish it around in your mouth and then swallow it, because that too can erode your dental surface. All right? You want to drink it down, then rinse your mouth. I'm Gary Noll. We're going to take a quick break and be back in a moment with the remainder of our program. Please stay with us. I'd like to welcome you from all over the world. I'm going to share pieces of a puzzle. And based upon your background, your perception, the context of your life that right now, you will arrange these as you see fit. I'm merely telling you what I see. Oh, by the way, my lecture tonight is our fundraiser for our sister station, WBI, is packed. The entire auditorium is full. It's good for the stations, raising them over $20,000 net-net, but there's no more tickets, I'm sorry. In any case, let me give you background on this, because these little stories are how you can better understand how I see things. There was a time down in South Beach, because my home's in Florida, and on a ranch I live, and I spend a lot of time there, try to, though I've been away from it for a long time because of all my travels and filming, which you'll see more of later this year when a series of documentaries, brand new, hard-hitting, come your way. And I have five in post-production and three in pre-production, or actual production. In fact, I was filming yesterday in New Jersey, the day before in Hartford, the day before that in Pennsylvania, this Sunday in Spain, and last 2 weeks ago in Denmark. So lots of filming going on. But I always like to go over, and I would go over and visit, just spend a couple days in South Beach, which is one of the most beautiful places, in my opinion. The most beautiful street in America is Lincoln Road. If you've never been there, it's worth the trip. And I decided to buy an apartment there, but where I wanted to buy it was then all run down. In fact, there was nothing there. It was just a field. But I took a look around, and I said, this is where I believe the next movement will be, and I was correct. Took a few years, but then it became booming, and now it's really booming, and I've since sold because a lot of reasons I don't like to be there anymore. In any case, one day while driving across the bridge, the bay, separating Miami Beach, which is South Beach, and Miami, I noticed all these buildings. Now, mind you, this was a Sunday evening, and the building should have had lights on. And they didn't. And I stopped, and I drove over, and I start asking some doormen. I see the, you know, there must be 20 buildings up and down through here. I don't see any lights on. Where are the people? He's all, you know, people don't live here. They bought them on spec. So I went to building after building after building. I must spend 3 hours, 4 hours talking, and I want to know this. And so when I came back, I spoke with a broker friend of mine, and I said, are you aware of how much spec buying? He says, am I aware? I own six of them. I own five over there, and I own three here. I said, take a look. We're in a bubble. Bubbles burst. What are you paying, 5%? He says, yeah, you can buy anything for 5% down. And I said, and you got an adjustable mortgage? I said, what do you think happens when you're... tease time, when they tease you with a low interest, no interest down initially, but then it kicks in, and it kick in, go to 6%, 8%. And I said, then you don't have money to pay your carrying charges. And if you don't sell, I said, then you're going to lose everything. No, 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 Gary, what are you talking about? Don't be Mr. Gloom and Doom. The place is booming. I said, it's not booming. You don't have the infrastructure here. You don't have the supporting small businesses here. I went up and down the street. I didn't see the restaurants and the dry cleaning stores and the shoe repair, and I didn't see what you have to have a stable community. All you have are speculative businesses. I said, get out. He didn't get out. 4 years later, he went bankrupt. He was not alone. School teachers were taking their income and speculating. One I knew owned four homes. Now, unfortunately, none of my friends listened to me, and they lost a bunch. There's two ways this is going to play out. One way is that over the next 3 to 5 years, people around the world will start looking at the instability in their currencies, in their development, and the crime that comes when you don't have economic stability and equality, and in effect the ghettoization of a nation, but it starts neighborhood by neighborhood. And they're going to be moving into the United States as one of the safe havens. and they're going to be in the places where they believe they'll get the most value, and also where if they choose to be here, they can come and enjoy it, because we're in a massive bubble. Now, I told everyone in this audience, if you go back and listen to my old archive shows, I told you in 2002, 3, 4, 5, and 6, and 7, get out of the real estate market. It's a bubble. There's nothing holding it up except you can buy stuff because of cheap debt. And look what happened. Now, all over Manhattan, there are just dozens of high-rise buildings. Over on 10th Avenue, but look at 10th Avenue. There's a contradiction here, hence red flag. You have $1 million to $20 million apartments being built, hundreds of them, thousands of them, and yet the city doesn't have the money to pay for smoothing out 10th Avenue. It doesn't have the same money to fix up any of Soho streets. Then look at what happens around the United States. People want to be where there are other people who are like them. So if they're affluent, they want to move to the affluent neighborhoods in affluent areas. Well, more and more of those areas are green zones, little oases, but all around them, there is poverty. And hence, with that poverty comes crime. So one of two things are going to work here. One is that we will end up as a nation of green zones and everybody else. The trouble is everybody else is 270 million approximate human beings whose lives will be dramatically altered. No one's equating the environment. What happens when you have soil that is too hot to germinate seeds because it's increased by 2 degrees or 3 degrees, or too wet because instead of having 1 week every month of rain, you now have 66 straight days that happen in one area of Texas and cause chronic flooding, and all the seeds that were put in were washed out. Farmers didn't have the money to go buy new seeds, and it also left massive mold all over their ground, and you have to get rid of the mold or the mold will impact the seeds. So now we have major areas of the American breadbasket in Kansas and others, Illinois, Indiana. Those are having problems. You have excessive hot in some areas and excessive cold in others. So food production and distribution and utilization, the affordability of food for that 270 million Americans is going to be a question, not for the wealthy. The wealthy can always buy the food that's available, and there will always be food available, if not from here, other places. So you've got two different ways of dealing with the reality, but there's one reality. One reality is they can impact the environment. It's tipped. So what happens when you have massive food shortages? What happens when you have excessive cold and people don't have the heat? What happens when you need water, but they've turned off your water? How long before you get social upheaval? Now, here are some things about Manhattan that you should know, and I don't think you do. These are actual figures. I just had them reconfirmed this morning. Last night I walked from the Upper West Side. I wanted to walk down Lincoln Center and back. And almost every day I take a walk and I count empty businesses. I'm counting more empty businesses from 89th and Broadway to 63rd and Broadway, then back up Amsterdam and down Columbus, than at any time in the last 15 years. Now, sooner or later, someone will take over that business, but it's not the 12 people, individual businesses on a block. It's a gigantic superstore, like a bank or a drugstore. So the Upper West Side has become totally changed. How bad is it? Well, while you were all paying attention to other things, 3.4 to 3.8 million New Yorkers lost their jobs from 1994 to 2014. There was 420 to 465,000 businesses, small businesses, closed. In just every month, right now, you have 1,000 businesses closing per month. You have 488 warrants for vacate, where the marshal serves the store and says you must vacate. Some people have the money to fight it, others don't, and they move. And under de Blasio, you have more than you did under Bloomberg. In fact, you have more foreclosures. How is that possible? Because follow the money trail, follow the builders, the big landlords. They control the city council, they control the state, they control everything, and they're closing small businesses. Why should you care? The number one employer in all of New York State are small businesses. Small businesses are the backbone for labor coming in. Now, then I'm looking at new buildings, and I'm seeing something. I'm seeing new buildings that are 100% occupied, but no lights are on. What does that mean? Here's the other scenario. Instead of New York becoming the ever-growing bubble where you buy an apartment today for $3 million, it's worth $5 million next year. You buy one for $20 million, it becomes worth $50 million. There's now one building, it's billionaires only. I believe that we've overlooked something. When people come in and speculate by parking their money, by buying these, who are these? Are these people who are going to live there and eat restaurant food? Are they going to support small businesses? No, there's not enough to do that. As a result, with the bubble created in San Francisco and Los Angeles and New York and Pittsburgh and Miami, regular people can no longer afford to live where they work, and they can't even afford to be in the suburbs. So they're moving further and further and further away. When I was in California, I was driven by a guy who used to be a former commissioner there, till he lost his job in the housing market. And he said he now has to live 2 hours north of San Francisco to work each day in San Francisco. That's how far the bedroom communities go. So what's this phenomenon? Why should you be concerned? Because the people coming in frequently are buying things on debt, and many people are saying, oh, I got to get that apartment, and you got to take your checkbook. And as long as they can get very cheap loans, which they can now, and corporations get loans at 0%, then we're in a huge commercial real estate bubble. We're in a huge real estate bubble all over again, as if we learned nothing from the last one. And that means that the core of middle-class people capable of providing the jobs and the income from their jobs and their taxes are what keep the streets paved, keep the services in place, and keep a quality of life going. And that is not happening in New York. The working middle class is being forced out of all the cities in the United States, and they have to adapt. In Santa Fe, people who work there now have to live in Albuquerque, an hour away, because they can't afford the real estate. The bubble is so big. It's also true in Boulder and Denver. That's part of the problem. So the small businesses can't afford to be there. Now, if the small business can't afford to be there, then the employees that were getting a quality of life and a living from that small business, they're going to have to find work elsewhere. And if they can't find it in New York, they find it wherever they can migrate to find it. So we're losing an enormous amount of the tax-paying base, all because of corruption and greed. So I don't believe that we're going to see all these new buildings filled with people. I believe that we're going to see speculators. I believe that people are parking their money here for the time being because it's one of the safe places in a strong dollar now to park it. But they're not looking at the basics, and if you don't look at the basics, you're going to get creamed. So I'm predicting another major, catastrophic bubble collapse. Look at Wall Street. Dow up around 17,400. What's its real value if you took out all the speculation? Around 6,000. So people are thinking that they're making fortunes. Well, some are. But these are not the brightest people in the world who work on Wall Street. You think they are? They're not. They missed the bubble, even though they were creating it. And what about all those pension funds and all the other people who should have known better and kept their money invested and lost? So let's look at the debt right now, because the debt is where you're not paying attention. According to Zero Hedge, in a shocking admission for most of mainstream America, the former U.S. Comptroller General says the real U.S. dollar is closer to about $65 trillion than the oft-reported figure of $18 trillion, thanks to unfunded liabilities which simply cannot be ignored. As The Hill reports, unless economic growth accelerates, which it can't, why can't economic growth accelerate? Because we're not bringing factories into America. We're not bringing living wages into those factories. We're not allowing small businesses to flourish. We're overtaxing them. We're overcharging them on rent. And then we're making real estate too expensive for anyone except those who are massively overleveraged in debt or have someone subsidizing to live there. It's all a house of cards. We're exporting every single job we can to a third world country that exploits their own labor and still can do so, so they can re-import a cheaper variety of what we used to make in quality and quality of life wages in the United States. As a result, quote, you're not going to be able to provide the kind of social safety net that you need in this country. Quote, we have lost touch with reality when it comes to spending. So stop thinking $18 trillion is what we owe. No, the federal government, just the federal government, owes $65 trillion. That does not include corporate America. Now, corporate America keeps telling you, trust us, because we know what we're doing. And I'm saying, you don't know what you're doing. You're the ones behind all this. You're driving under, because of unmitigated greed, power, and sociopathic personalities, you're driving debt. You have $25 trillion in corporate debt. Don't tell me that I should become stupid by believing that what you own, which is a debt, should be made magically into an asset. An asset is only an asset when it is unencumbered by debt. Debt in itself is not an asset. It is an encumbered debt, therefore an encumbered asset. Therefore, whoever owns the debt owns the asset, because when you don't pay, your house is taken away, your car is taken away, your jewelry is taken away, and you're left with the debt, and someone else has the asset. So this is the wrong time to be buying anything. You should be selling every damn thing you can and putting it into cheap silver, pre-1963 gold. In my opinion, the market, we have proven, this is not speculative, this is not conspiratorial theory, we've proven by court cases and outcomes where the bankers, the biggest bankers in the world, were manipulating the cost of price of gold and silver and other commodities to profit off of it. If you allowed gold to be at its actual price today, it would be closer to $3,000 an ounce, and silver would be over $55 on its way to $200. And the dollar is strong now. The dollar will not be strong in the near future, and I'll get to that in a moment. So we have to look at the idea that we become a nation of debt serfs. According to El Ali Khan from Counterpunch, as of just October this year, American consumers owe $8.7 trillion in mortgages, and many of those are underwater. Hence, they're going to lose it. We have $900 billion in credit card debt, and that's just the beginning, because that doesn't take into account the compounding or late interest fees, which can go anywhere from 28% to 1,000%, depending upon if it's a payday loan or debit card. We have $1.19 trillion in student loans, and unfortunately, they have made it impossible to get out of that with bankruptcy. And you can thank Joe Biden for that, by the way. In fact, let me share this with you. If you want to think these people in power positions care about you, this is from David Ciorda from International Business Times. Quote, Jennifer Ryan did not love the idea of taking on debt, but she figured she was investing in her future. Eager to further her teaching and career, she took out loans to gain certification, later pursued an advanced degree. But her studies came at a massive cost, leaving her confronting $190,000 in student loans. Quote, it's overwhelming, she said. I can't pay it back on the schedule the lenders have demanded. In the past, debtors in her position could have used bankruptcy court to shield them from some of their creditors, but a provision slipped into a federal law in 2005 effectively bars most Americans from accessing bankruptcy protection for their private student loans. In recent months, Democrats have touted legislation to roll back that law, as Americans now face $1.2 trillion in total outstanding debt from their government and private student loans. The bill is a crucial component of a party's pro-middle-class economic message heading 2016, yet one of the lawmakers most responsible for limiting the legal options of Ryan and students like her is the man who some Democrats hope will be their party's standard-bearer Vice President Joe Biden as a senator from Delaware, a corporate tax haven where the financial industry is one of the state's largest employers. Biden was one of the key proponents of the 2005 legislation that is now bearing down on students like Ryan. That bill effectively prevents the $150 billion worth of private student debt from being discharged, rescheduled, or renegotiated as other debt has. So, you see, you don't really know what the legislators or people in power have done in the past that is pro-industry, pro-lobby group, pro-banking, and anti-you. Their rhetoric notwithstanding. So what we have is we have a nation carrying a massive amount of debt, students who can't get a job in the area of their expertise, and if they can, it's always at the bottom. As a result, people are being sued, arrested, and going into debtors' prisons. And by the way, debtors' prisons are now back. And credit products are sold as fantasies of power and comfort and freedom. Let me tell you something. Owning a home has become the most heavily debt-infested American dream. Living modestly with a less ambitious spouse in a little prairie house or a nondescript apartment, that's not something people are interested in. We think that is something from third world or long ago. So what we get now is for a little mortar, for a little square footage, we put ourselves into deep debt. And then we can't get out of it. And then everything else we do adds to it. Now, who are the people responsible? This is from Activist Post. Quote, the 10 biggest Wall Street banks now facing legal action for price-fixing $320 trillion derivative market. Quote, from New York. A class action lawsuit filed last week accuses two trading platforms and 10 of Wall Street's largest mega banks of conspiring to stifle competition in the $320 trillion derivative market for interest rate swaps. So, the banks are at it again. You have a huge bubble, a catastrophic bubble in derivatives. Derivatives should be banned. They should not be allowed to exist at all. And yet, people on Wall Street, and I've said this many times, if every bank on Wall Street was deconstructed, put out of business, it wouldn't impact you or I at all, unless we had one of the positions held by the banks or any of the firms that work with the banks, the hedge funds, equity partnerships, where they use pensions or our money, our retirement money, or bonds. And bonds are going to go way down. Now, here's the latest on that. Quote, latest guilty pleas prove big bank criminality rampant, but jail time non-existent from Deidre Fulton, Common Dreams. In the wake of Wednesday's announcement that five global financial institutions have agreed to plea guilty to multiple crimes and pay about $5.6 billion in penalties for manipulating foreign currencies and interest rates, corporate watchdogs are reiterating the call to, quote, break up the banks in light of their ongoing malfeasance. And then it goes through the names, and these are all banks that you have your money in, J.P. Morgan Chase, Barclays, Royal Bank of Scotland, Citigroup, will plead guilty to, quote, conspiring to manipulate the price of U.S. dollars and euros, authorities said. By the way, and they've also been manipulating the price of gold and silver. Now, what is the debt to the gross domestic product? We say that places like Greece and Italy and France and other countries, Ireland, are a basket case because they have too much debt to their income. And generally after 200%, you're considered a basket case. Here is the fact. This is from Michael Snyder, Economic Collapse. Quote, the total amount of debt on our planet has grown from $142 trillion at the end of 2007 to $199 trillion today. This is the largest mountain of debt in the history of the world, and those numbers mean that we are substantially worse conditioned than we were just prior to the financial collapse, and it shows that the United States is up there at about $70 trillion, and we don't have the gross domestic product, so we are about 400% of gross domestic product to debt, meaning we have more debt than we have gross domestic product. We cannot possibly pay off our debt. Now, I said something a couple of weeks ago that I'm going to be very meticulous with to show you that this is not it's not just a coincidence. I said, you got to look for what people are not paying attention to. You got to look for the companies that are going broke, how many employees they have in the United States, and what that means. And if you understand those figures, then you can get an idea of why you should really be conscious. And here are some companies that are going broke. By the way, one of the largest energy cartels in the world today announced they're laying off 85,000 employees, selling off their factories. Why? Because the value of taking an element out of the ground, whether it's ore or coal or anything else, mining it, refining it, and giving it to manufacturers is so low that they will go broke manufacturing it. So all kinds of companies are laying off people, closing down, or going out of business. And then if you don't have those materials, then people are not going to buy them. And if the average person is already so heavy in debt, how are they supposed to have money for more material possessions unless they are one of the maybe 40 million Americans who are capable of buying stuff because they still have a good ratio of income to their debt? Here's what you got to watch. You got to watch all these companies because they're all over America. And when one of these companies goes broke and they close down, what happens to the tax base in that community? What happens to the property value? What happens to the collectible taxes for schools and for the state to run the infrastructure? It evaporates. Here's some specifics. Cobalt International Energy, 200 employees, $2 billion in debt. Comstock Resources in Texas, 150 employees, $1.4 billion debt. Conitor Oil and Gas, $200 million in debt, 200 employees. Energy 11 Gulf, 500 employees, $4.7 billion in debt. Exco Resources in Texas, 600 employees, $1.6 billion in debt. Forbes Energy in Rhode Island, 2,500 employees, and $300 million in debt. First Oil, Sabin Oil, $800 million in debt, and they're in bankruptcy. Goodrich Petroleum in Texas, 80 employees left. They're $650 million in debt. Halcon Resources Corporation, Texas, 500 employees, $3.7 billion in debt. And Heckman Corporation, and they have 2,500 employees. They're $550 million in debt. Hercules Offshore, $1.2 billion in debt. And 2,000 employees. Lynn Energy in Texas. Now, why am I mentioning all this? Because these are companies that are in the energy business, and the cost of producing and processing oil is now below $40 a barrel. What does it actually cost them to produce a barrel of light crude? About $65. That means on every single barrel of oil they produce, they lose $25. Well, how many of those can you afford to lose? So what they did when interest rates were low and the price of oil was $116, they borrowed. And everybody borrowed when the oil business was booming. But then what happened when they had to repay all that? Hundreds of billions of dollars, and the price of oil collapsed. And it's going to stay collapsed for a long time. So all these companies, in my personal opinion, well, they don't just represent employees who I believe are going to be losing their jobs, but all that money that those employees spend in the community. Remember what I said? When I saw those empty buildings where the buildings were sold, the apartments were sold, but there were no supporting businesses. When I look around New York City and I see how many small businesses are going broke and how many people can't afford to work in those stores and how many people can't afford to buy stuff anymore. You have to look at every part of a person. Otherwise, you can do great. You can take a wonderful massage and shower and groom yourself and put on a suit, and no one looks down to see you've got massive gangrene in your legs while you're sitting in a wheelchair but smiling, and the picture is from the chest up. And how you feeling? I'm feeling great. What's the future? Future couldn't be better. Buy. Spend. But I stood back and I looked, and you've got gangrene and you're dying. Ah, that's just not a problem. We can cut the legs off. Understand what I'm saying. The pieces don't fit together. You've been lied to. You were lied to by Alan Greenspan and by Bernanke and Paulson. In fact, everybody out of the Treasury and Wall Street was lying. They are pathological in their nature. and the media were complicit. The rating agencies were complicit. If you wanted a perfect AAA rating on a bond, you bought it. Because Standard & Poor's and Pricewaterhouse and these others, and Moody's, they wanted the business. And if you didn't give them the business, they'd go to someone else who would, they would say, hey, if you're not going to give me a AAA rating, I'm going to take away this $500,000 or $1 million or $2 million from you for rating it, and I'll give it someone else. It's parasitic. It is dangerous. Mid-States Petro in Oklahoma, 200 employees, $2 billion in debt. Milligro Oil in Texas, $1 billion in debt. Niskas Gas in Pennsylvania, $800 million in debt, 200 employees. So now what happens when you have 200 employees who have been working in the industry, and they have to be let go? How do they buy clothes and go out to eat and go to a movie? And how do they upgrade their car? What do they do with their house? The likelihood is they're going to lose their house. And what about the true number of uninhabited houses? Oh, you didn't know. They kept millions of houses off the market because if they let you know how many actual empty houses were on the market, it would depress the existing market by at least 30%. It is my projection that real estate in the United States will collapse by up to 50% when this starts going south, and you will see a depression worse than the 1930s. Now, I have pages of information on more resource companies in the United States and how much they owe and how many employees they have. Saratoga Resources in Texas, $200 million in debt. And Sandridge Energy in Oklahoma, 2,000 employees, but they're almost $5 billion in debt. And so it goes. But then you've got commodity companies like metal companies that have suffered since demand for metals decreased as demand for electronics and luxuries have declined. 500,000 plus Americans will become unemployed in just the commodities companies. Hundreds of billions of dollars in debts that cannot be paid back. Castle A&M, an Illinois-based company of metals and plastics, 2,000 employees, $400 million in debt. Cliffs Natural Resources in Ohio, 5,500 employees, and $600 million in debt. What do you think happens to a community when 5,500 employees no longer have a job? Who pays the school taxes? Who pays the county taxes? Who pays the property taxes? If they can't pay, they don't have a house. If they don't have a house and it's empty, now you've got this entire quagmire that someone put an AstroTurf that's about a half inch thick over quicksand. Don't look at what they're telling you to look at. Look under it. See the truth. And I've got hundreds of companies in the commodities business and the employees. For example, let me give you one here. What do you think of this? Glencore. How many employees they have? Are you ready for this? 180,000 employees. Let me repeat that, 180,000, and they have $30 billion in debt. And then Magnetation and 500 employees and $400 million in debt. And then a Colorado Rare Earth Metals Company has got 2,000 employees and $1.7 billion in debt. And then Patriot Coal in St. Louis has 3,000 employees and $1.1 billion in debt. And they're already in bankruptcy. And how about Peabody Energy in St. Louis? $6.3 billion in debt and 9,000 employees. I'd like to know, how long do you think it's going to take before 500,000 additional employees who are now making good livings are then on unemployment lines and then taken out of the unemployment numbers? Now then you got retail corporations, many of which can't figure out how to sell online, but did figure out how to borrow too much money. And as a result, listen carefully, as online sales continue to climb, many retail stores are closing down or scaling back. More than 5 million more Americans will become unemployed because of this. Many retail stores couldn't figure out how to sell, and as a result, they can't compete. And AMP, in New Jersey based, $2.3 billion in debt, 25,000 employees. Did I just miss something, or did one of the chains that AMP owns, Food Emporium, didn't they close? Yes, they did. Well, What happened to all those people? They had to find work elsewhere. What if there are no other supermarkets in the area where they could work? Then they got to go where they can. What if they have to move? Then they have to move. That's how it works. Albertsons in California, 250,000 employees, but they got $8 billion in debt. American Apparel in California, $300 million in debt and 9,000 employees. Bontorn Department Stores, 25,000 employees and $1 billion in debt. Connecticut, Arcon's Texas-based, they have 4,500 employees and $900 million in debt. Guitar Center, they have 10,000 employees and $1.7 billion in debt. You see the key today, and I've got pages upon pages. JCPenney, 114,000 employees and $5.5 billion in debt, and I believe they're going to go. Jones Apparel, 6,000 employees in New York City, $900 million in debt. And then you have the Pizza Hut chains in Kentucky, the KC. They're in Kansas, and they've got 29,000 employees, but they've got $1 billion in debt. And it's a highly competitive market. Where you got the money to pay them back? Radio Shack. $1.2 billion in debt and 50,000 employees. So you see Rite Aid, $7.3 billion in debt, 51,000 employees. Sears Roebuck, $3.4 billion in debt and 200,000 employees, and that's a basket case. Toys R Us, New Jersey, 70,000 employees, 1.3. So do you understand what I'm saying? If you're one of the people in these companies that cannot afford the debt, and sometimes they can't afford the debt because of equity buyouts, where the original company, like Linen and Things and Circuit City and Macy's, when they were not owned by equity partnerships, which in my opinion are a disease upon society, economic genocidalists, they could manage. They could downsize, but then someone comes in and buys them, and they buy them because they make their money on the deal. They take massive amounts of profit out. You use other people's money, and now they own the company, and they say, well, this company's been around 100 years. Let's strip off the different departments. Let's downsize people. Let's use their pension fund. They completely destroy the company, and then one day the company is no longer able to put all of its profits into managing its debt, servicing its debt, and then it goes broke. We've had 54,000 factories close in the last 15 years in the United States. How many employees then had to go find other work, and where they might have had in those factories a living wage, now they're working at minimum wage, so they can't afford anything. And then how many are depressed? How many commit suicide? How many are on drugs? How many are obese? How many just feel apathetic? So you got 5 million Americans who are going to become unemployed because of not being able to have their products sold, and hence all that debt. And so with the winding down of the long, expensive, multi-trillion dollar wars in Iraq and Afghanistan, along with other factors like certain contractors falling out of favor with government officials who spend billions of our tax dollars each year, are some defense-related companies. And you have in Falls Church, Virginia, $1.8 billion, 1,000 employees in Altegrity. And then you have Colt Defense, the makers of the original M16, they're now bankrupt, $350 million in debt, and few employees left. And DynCorp in Virginia, 25,000 employees, $800 million in debt. And as long as there's war, these people can get our money to pay for their salaries. That's how it works. And media and communication companies, many are now scaling back or shutting down. Just take a look at the numbers of people who have abandoned Fox, NBC, MSNBC, CNN. It's a wonder they got 16 people left in America to watch that crappy little place of such bias. They just ought to put a big stamp across their forehead on everybody that's on there saying, tell us what to say, corporate America, and we'll say it. I don't even bother to turn it on because I don't believe anything they say. But media and communication companies, many are now scaling back or shutting down, leaving more Americans unemployed. Charter Communications, $14 billion in debt, 24,000 employees. Clear Channel Communication down in Texas, $21 billion in debt. Good luck paying that off in 21,000 employees. Knight Rider, the McClatchy Company, 6,000 employees, $1.1 billion in debt. Where are you going to pay that? How are you going to pay it? Except roll it over? That just accumulates more interest on your debt. And LBI Media, 1,000 employees and $200 million in debt. And those are just some examples of the overly indebted media corporations, because when they can borrow and used their company as collateral. They borrowed heavy. So the mistake was everybody thought whatever asset they had, they could parlay to massive gain, and they did. Just like the people who had their homes worth $100,000, they borrowed $200,000, thought, I can go spend $100,000. No, you can't, because you don't own your home anymore. Whoever gave you the money does. And what happens when you lose your job? You lose your home and your car. And yet we had this fetish that we had to support this. Many banks have also borrowed too much money on the assumption they're too big to fail. And when they do fail, the government will bail them out again. Well, let's see. Because right now, Bank of America has 220,000 employees, but they have $525 billion in debt plus trillions in derivatives. And Bank of Nova Scotia, 90,000 employees, and based a Canada-based bank operating in the USA, has $104 billion in debt, trillions in derivatives. Capital City Bank and Trust of Atlanta, Georgia, has 240,000 employees and $490 billion in debt, plus tens of trillions in derivatives. These banks are all bankrupt. They're screwed. Now the question is, will you allow, will you tolerate, will you protest, or will you eat a hamburger? And watch the Kardashians when someone says, we got to bail these good people out or the American economy will break. No, it won't. No one should be bailed out. None of these people. And I have dozens. Now, Goldman Sachs also has 35,000 employees, but they're $400 billion in debt plus tens of trillions of dollars in derivatives. So you see, nothing was learned from the last major financial crisis, except the people in power figured out how they could use their connections, Wall Street connections, to get all the money they wanted and have all their dirty assets laundered and cleaned up, and hundreds of billions of dollars, trillions in the case of two banks, Citigroup, for example, and J.P. Morgan, trillions, to make them be able to go back out instead of doing good banking and instead to buy competition and exploit currencies. And I have dozens, Cablevision, Aldis's takeover of Cablevision, $8 billion in new debt to $9.6 billion already in debt, 14,000 employees, and hundreds of thousands of corporations in the United States borrowed too much money, and they will experience debt collapses in the months to come. And I just mentioned some of the corporations as a snapshot. I mentioned fewer than 1% of the U.S. corporations that will have to scale back or shut down because their executives borrowed too much money. And with few exceptions, the U.S. corporate executives who borrowed too much money then paid themselves gigantic amounts of money and a gravy train of freebie perks and freebie benefits and bonuses with that borrowed money. And yet nothing was done to them. And so you have China, heavy in debt, and their economy being constricted tremendously. So we thought after the collapse, the good money would run into the BRIC nations, the Brazil and Russia and India and China and South Africa, and now 22 other nations supporting them. Wrong. Brazil, it's in a depression. India, a depression. China would be in a depression if it didn't spend trillions of dollars on phantom and ghost cities just so that you could employ people in those cities. Nobody lives in them. They're all over the place. There are hundreds of them. But it kept the economy rolling, like making a road to nowhere. Everybody who's working on the road will get paid, and everyone else has to pay the taxes on that unless you hide it. You look at Japan, a basket case, will never get out of debt. And Europe is one giant bankruptcy. With the exception of Germany, everyone else cannot repay their debt. It's not possible. So look for the first revolutions to occur in Italy, and when they start taking away their social benefits, and then look at Portugal, Spain, and Greece, unfortunately, has shown that they're not willing to throw the bastards out who put them in trouble and then made multiple compromises where now you have young women having to prostitute themselves, and you have people living by eating in dumpster trash and homelessness. They should have thrown every member of their parliament out and gotten out of the euro, went back to their own currency, forgave all debt, and started to rebuild their society. They made all wrong choices. Everyone's making wrong choices. And that's unfortunate. So I'm just giving you what I see, and I don't see New York City becoming the beacon of safety and the harbor of all money that is fleeing countries. And by the way, always look for the amount of money that is leaving a country, because the smart money, the people who see what's happening, will get their money out of their country, at least as much as they can, into another country they think is safer. And that's why you see so many million and now billionaire apartments in New York. But don't be fooled. They're not all occupied. They may be bought, but there's a lot of speculation went on to build those houses for people. And now the price of real estate has gone up and up and up, and the politicians all side at the state and local level, and we've seen what kind of hellhole of a completely overflowing septic system New Jersey political and New York political operations are in Albany and Trenton, and they sold out to their developers. But those developers are deep in debt. And so the fundamentals, the basic fundamentals of having a society without debt, a living wage, a secure work environment, structural compatibility of the commons, meaning good bridges and tunnels and highways, in a community with quality education and an ability to help people, that's from the 1950s, 60s, and most of the 70s. We don't have that today. We have gated communities and green zones, and that's what we'll have in the future. But how do you get to a green zone? You're going to have to be meeting face-to-face the people who I filmed in Poverty Inc., and they haven't found their voice yet. But when the poor working and middle class find their voice, then they won't be voting for any Democrat or Republican who have contributed to this. They'll be protesting. And when they stop buying the apartments and they stop buying the homes and they stop buying all the clothes they don't need and the clothes made outside the United States, when they stop buying the GMO food, when they stop putting money in their bank, when they stop using their credit cards and tearing it up and engaging in constructive barter and fair exchange, when they realize they don't need more in order to be happy, then this entire edifice, this massive bubble, equity bubble, bond bubble, commercial real estate bubble, reinflated the housing bubble, student loan bubble, and credit card bubble. There's your six big bubbles. Now take into account Mother Nature and the super El Nino that they're going to be experiencing, and extreme weather events, and then the fact that so many people cannot afford to live where they once worked and had to move, and you're not going to have a tax base in order to support the basic infrastructures. See, a bunch of rich people don't spend money locally. The rich people spend money on yachts and cars and jewelry, something that the average person doesn't make. It's just amazing that people haven't seen this. But I see it when I see high-rises that are finished and sold and empty, just like I did when I came across the bridge and looked at all those homes in South Beach that were all sold, but to speculators buying on cheap credit. My suggestion again, get out of debt. The markets are going to crash, in my opinion. I hope I'm wrong, but every single thing that I've seen and all the analysis I've done shows me that you should be looking at safer environments, cooperative living, sustainable off-the-grid, solar, having your own water. The smartest people, in my opinion, would be those who will be getting back to nature, and there's plenty of wonderful places in America that are sustainable with progressive communities to live. And unless you're very rich and you can afford constant security and all that you need, in which case you won't know that there's a single hungry or poor person or homeless person or needy person in America, because you don't see them, you don't want to know they exist, you're only going to face another day and how much you can control of your own life. I'm Gary Nall. Thank you all for listening. Look forward to sharing more on the next program. Have a nice day.
When I became of age, my mother called me to her side. She said, son, you're growing up now. Pretty soon you'll take a bride. And then she said, just because you become a young